second, India have won the Test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.
Hey, hello and welcome to the 81 All Out podcast. I'm Subhash Jayaraman in place of Sidvi. And I'm joined by Peter Miller on Twitter as the Cricket Geek, who used to blog, host podcast, I think Geeks and Friends, and write for several outlets. And now he's the head of PR and communications at the Caribbean Premier League. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing quite well, thanks, Peter. Thanks for joining in at the late notice. You know, we are reviewing the 32nd group match of the 2019 World Cup that Australia won over England by 64 runs, quite handily, one might say. What are your initial impressions from the game, Peter?
First off, we've just had the 32nd group game of the tournament and we've still only eliminated two teams mathematically, which is quite impressive. We're this far in, we're like a month into this tournament and it's only South Africa and Afghanistan that can't make it to the playoffs. I was just saying before you press record, Subhash, it's a weird one today because this was a proper old-fashioned England at a World Cup performance where they didn't really show up. They got a little bit unlucky, I think, in the first 8 to 10 overs where on another day they could have had Australia in the position they found themselves in their batting innings.
Mm-hmm.
On another day, Australia could have been 26 for three. Yeah. But I think Australia probably still would have ended up with about 280, if you see what I mean. I think Australia went a weird way about getting that. And then this Australian team as well is just really odd because they've only got 3.5 bowlers. Yeah, yes. And England managed to concede a 5-wicket haul to Jason Berendorf, which I didn't see happening pre-tournament, to be honest. He wasn't the bowler when I saw the toss. I was thinking, that's the guy that England should be worried about. So I don't know. I think it's just the game against Pakistan was one that they worry about the least because they lost the batting contest. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And on another day, they'll bat themselves to win that. But the other two games that they've lost against Sri Lanka and now against Australia have mm-hmm. been on pitches that are a bit tricky. Now, that, I think, is a legitimate concern because I don't think the pitches are going to be any different between now and the end of the tournament. And that's probably a good thing, right? That they're actually, we've got a nice mix of pitches. There's been a few that are super flat, some that are quite spicy and some that are in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose the good news for England fans is they really are realistically one win out of two games away from making the semi-finals. And they could, in theory, still make the semi-finals on 8 points thanks to their run rate. It is a worry that they seem to have managed to cock up their best chance of winning a World Cup in our lifetimes.
Well, you wrote a whole book on it, so, you know, they don't want to make a liar out of you.
Well, you know, we were, you know, talking about, the only way you could potentially do something different with that book and improve on it is really if England were to win it or if they were to go out in the knockout stages. And I don't think I could bring myself to do anything for the latter. It would be depressing. I don't really care. I don't really care if England win or lose nowadays, to be honest. But at the same time, I do find it frustrating when I see a good team who have the potential to really ignite cricket in this country stuff things up.
I mean, that's true. You know, like, even whether you're an England fan or not, or if you just follow cricket and the way, the form with which England came into the World Cup and the way, the form that they've been in the last 4 years, you know, they haven't lost a back-to-back game since January 2017, you know, which is a run of 60 games. And, you know, they have they had a formidable record chasing totals at home, leading to this World Cup. Anything that you can put your finger on?
I mean, I'm saying as well, is it the pressure of a World Cup? Has that made a difference to this team that have kind of said it doesn't matter, it's just another game of cricket? Has that entered into their brains a little bit? I think leaving out Liam Plunkett has been a mistake, and I can see why they were tempted not to pick him. But I think with the form that Moeen Ali is in with the bat, Plunkett's probably a better option batting down the order. He can hit you a few sixes.
Mm-hmm.
and has done that in the past. You know, he can score you with 35 off 20. And as well, as much as his bowling is neither exciting nor pretty, it is mightily effective. And he does take wickets in that middle over period. I reckon the big thing about this World Cup is, and maybe today isn't the best time for me to wheel out this theory, actually, mate. The exact opposite happened. But I think if a team can get to 120 for one off 28 overs, it's very difficult to peg them back to a score you can chase. And I think that's maybe the way that one day cricket is going. And it's kind of gone back in a roundabout sort of way. We've gone from batting being revolutionised in 1996 with Kalawar Tarana and Jayasuriya going gung-ho in the first 15 overs, as was then, and scoring as many as they could, to now teams saying, in that first 10-over power play, we want to be 40 for one. Which is kind of how we thought about one-day cricket 30 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah. I want to give a shout-out to an article that is coming up on Crick Info by Kartikey Date. I have seen a preview of the draft of the article where he addresses this very point about this roundabout way and why that is with the rule changes of power play, where now you have from, you know, you have 10 hours of power play and then you have only four fielders outside and then five fielders outside, which gives, and these modern players, they know they can get a boundary anytime you want. So the key is that they're going to conserve wickets and then they can, batting first, they can get to pretty much any score they want in the last 15 overs. So yeah, you're right in saying that.
It's kind of the same with chasing as well, isn't it? I mean, and that's the interesting thing, I suppose, is England have made chasing 300-plus scores look easy over the last little while, all around the world, actually. It's not just in England where they've done it. Is the World Cup just a bit different? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it just that the World Cup gets inside your head?
The only fundamental thing that I could see is, you know, bilateral series versus a tournament format, where you're playing a different opposition every other day or every 4 or 5 days, whereas in a bilateral series, you're playing the same opposition, so you pretty much have the same set of bowlers that you have to go up against.
Yeah, there is that, isn't there? And then you can execute your plans. It is just different, isn't it, if you're playing the different teams? I kind of think maybe that's why the circus that is the Indian cricket team, and not in any way to disparage them, I mean just in terms of the fact that they pack up their kit and travel on to the next town, on a very regular basis, not in any way suggesting anyone in the Indian cricket team is a clown or an elephant. But, you know, the fact that they do have that kind of itinerant lifestyle where they're just constantly on the road and constantly going from one short series to another, maybe that's an advantage to them in these tournaments, because conditions do change so rapidly for them. And, you know, the amount of cricket that Virat Kohli plays is just ridiculous, isn't it? He doesn't take a series off, does he?
I can't recall. Well, I think he did, you know, maybe he took one.
Was there one in Zimbabwe?
I think he took an Asia Cup off last year. Other than that, I don't remember him taking anything off, really. Maybe the test against Afghanistan.
Well, even during the IPL, people were talking during the IPL, they're like, oh, there's no way Virat will play all RCB's games.
Yeah.
And Kohli's just there going, well, of course I'm going to play them all. I mean, and I think the advantage he's got is that he genuinely just absolutely loves playing cricket, which, why wouldn't he? I mean, it's kind of the job that all of us who do this nonsense kind of dreaming about doing, really, wasn't it? Because that's the dream, and then you realise you're never going to make it, so you end up making podcasts instead.
Coming back to this game, you know, were you surprised at all that having won the toss, England inserted Australia?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, there's two, maybe three points to it. One is they would have thought it's muggy overhead and at Lord's and there's a good chance the ball will move around. The other thing is that it absolutely tipped down all night last night in North London, and there was a good chance that there was going to be some moisture in the pitch when they took it off. And then also, they've been really good at chasing, right? Every time they've chased in recent years, they've won. And that's kind of maybe one of the more interesting things about this run of games that England have, the three games that England have lost have been three games where they were chasing, which going into the tournament, you would have been saying to yourself, well, that's their strength. They're really good at chasing totals, and they're less good at setting them up, because they don't know what a good score is, and they'll go too hard and they'll be 4 wickets down inside the first 12 overs, and then they creep to a score that's not competitive. But that isn't what's happened. When they've batted first, they've absolutely smashed it. Against Bangladesh, they scored 380. They scored, 390 against...
Afghanistan.
You know, those were the games where they absolutely bossed it. I still don't know how they managed to lose to that Sri Lanka team.
I think nobody does. Nobody does.
The thing is, like, people were there going, you know, there was someone tweeting me and they're like, oh, England haven't beaten Pakistan, sorry, haven't beaten Sri Lanka in a World Cup since 1992. And I'm there going, okay, this is clearly a different team from 2015. It's obviously a very different team from the ones in 07 and 11 that made the final. This is an absolute shambles of a Sri Lanka team. You know, they looked, I saw them in 2 warm-up games before the tournament started. And I honestly didn't think they were going to win a game, mate. I was like, they're dreadful. You know, they've got Kudarati opening the batting, going at a strike rate of 65.
Pre-tournament, I had Afghanistan beating Sri Lanka and ending up higher than Sri Lanka on the table.
Yeah, that's how I was at the game in Cardiff against the Sri Lanka Afghanistan game in Cardiff, and I thought they bowled their socks off. They bowled so well, right, to come back into that game, because they conceded a ridiculous amount of runs off the first few overs, didn't they? Their seamers went all over the place. Yeah. It was like something like 20 wides in the first 8 overs or something. And they pulled it back and they said they had a total that you're there thinking they can chase this. And then, as is the case, what I was saying at the time is, do you know the player that Afghanistan need is like a Darren Bravo?
Yeah.
Who's going to sit there in the middle order and just go, simmer down now, lads. I'm going to go along at a strike rate of 70, you know, it's going to be fine. And then you let the Nabis and Rashids of the world get you over the line, right?
Yeah.
But I think that loss, because going into the tournament, they would have looked at the other 10 teams in the tournament, Afghanistan, wouldn't they? And they'd have gone, do you know what? The team we can properly turn over in this tournament, Sri Lanka. We can win, and then we're guaranteed to win a game. Great. And I kind of think that took the wind out of their sails a little bit, in a similar way, actually, with the West Indies, that I think the loss to Australia, where I think they won that game with the bat, they won that game with the ball, and then still managed to lose against Australia.
When things like that happen, usually teams that are not used to winning all the time, you know, when I say all the time, I mean like 60% of the time, 60 to 70% of the time, the wheels sort of come off, especially against top opposition. You dominated the game, but yet you don't have nothing to show for it.
I suppose the concern for England is the same thing happens, right? And the wind goes out of their sails. Now, I think they're a very different team from West Indies, and that won't happen to them. And I can see them coming back against New Zealand, firing with the bat and absolutely smashing them. But there is 2 words that I'll say to you, Subhash, that I think is going to be telling as this tournament goes on, bearing in mind the injury concerns they've had. And those 2 words are Alex Hales.
Ooh, I wanted to talk about that. You know, first, how do you solve a problem like James Vince? And should England have taken Alex Hales in the squad? And, you know, apparently Roy's out back in the nets, Jason. So he should, in all likelihood, be playing against India. But did England shoot themselves in the foot by not including Alex Hales?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they've got more than enough players that they can live in that house. And what I'll say is I can understand why they made the decision with Hales. Now, I don't really necessarily like the way it happened. But I can kind of see why it did, if that makes sense. But the concern was that if you lose Roy or Bairstow, then that fundamentally changes what this England team is, because they've been so integral to the starts that England have got off to. Now, if you think across this tournament, where they've had a good opening partnership, they've gone on and posted a really big total. Where they haven't, they've struggled. So, you know, today against Sri Lanka, against Pakistan, they lost the openers early as well, I think, right? So it's kind of...
Yeah.
It is. So, but then having said that, they lost the opener super early against South Africa.
South Africa too, but...
Well, that game easy. So maybe I'm talking nonsense.
Yeah.
But it is important. And I think... The thing with your James Vinces of this world, to come into a World Cup having not really played a huge amount of cricket, and then to be given a position of opening the batting, which isn't necessarily the easiest thing to do in international cricket. Not that he hasn't done it for Hampshire and for in List A cricket before, mm-hmm. but it's not that not the easiest thing in the world for him to do. It's really, really tough to see that kind of coming off, right? And you'll come against, and my concern with Vince has always been that if he comes against a ball of just absolute outright class, he's going to be found out. And that's what happened today, right? The second ball he faced,
yep,
that's going to get out a lot of batsmen that early in their innings, right?
True.
But it's going to get James Vince out 95 times out of 100. And that's kind of maybe my little bit of my concern with him. I'd have liked Hales to be in the squad. You know, he would have been, you know, a bar injury would have just carried the drinks for 6 weeks. But it would have been nice, wouldn't it, for England to have a proven world-class white ball opening batsman walking out to bat in that top three if they'd needed him to.
Correct. Plus, he had been in the system for so long that, you know, the adjustment and all that makes sense. You know, we talked about England openers with the bat, you know, having inserted Australia and how the England new ball bowlers, you know, Wokes and Archer bowled compared to how Berendorf and Stark bowled, well, the difference was quite stark. Pardon the pun. But, you know, I think there was a pitch map that Nasser Hussain talked about where I think 42% of the deliveries bowled by Aussie new ball bowlers was in the slot, so which meant they allowed the ball to swing, whereas it was like less than 20 for the England bowlers. So, I mean, you would have expected Wokes, who is a pretty good swing bowler, to, you know, stick to a length and, you know, cause a lot more trouble than they actually ended up doing to Australian batsmen.
I mean, ultimately, what I'm sitting here thinking is just it's just a bit frustrating, isn't it? You know, I feel like I'm all revved up and I'm ready to go and really looking forward to England finally being good at a World Cup, which hasn't happened since I was a 13-year-old and you had Ian Botham bowling 60-mile-an-hour dibbly dobblers and taking 16 wickets across the tournament, right? And then even then, you know, it's like the thing is as well. Like you look at the, like, they found Jofra Archer. Jofra Archer's the leading wicket taker in this tournament, right? Or is he not now? I think Stark might have
overtaken. Stark has gone past him.
But 16 wickets, which is as many wickets as any England bowler's ever got at a World Cup after seven games, he's got 16 wickets. Mm. We've had 200s from Joe Root, 100 from Jason Roy, a ridiculous 100 from Owen Morgan, mm-hmm. right? Just some of the performances of the tournament. And we're sitting here going, well, yeah, England might not make the semi-finals. And do you know who should be going to England and just absolutely thanking them? And this was something that my mate Dave Tickner was saying, is that all of the fun games in this group stage have been England games, right?
Yes.
Which was exactly the same in 2011, wasn't it? If you think of that group stage, all the fun games were, you know, there was the Ireland game, there was the India game, there was the game where they defended a ridiculously low total against South Africa.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for England stuffing their lines, we would already have the top four decided for this tournament. So in a way, we should all be grateful to them. And also, the other thing to remember is that I've never been as happy about anything as someone who isn't an England fan is about England losing, right? So mm-hmm. in that regard, we're spreading happiness across the world by having a bad cricket team.
Let me ask you this. You said, you know, once in a lifetime or once in a generation opportunity, once in a generation side. But I was just reading an article from Sriram Veera. He's from Indian Express. He's covering the World Cup. And he just written a piece about the lack of publicity for the tournament. You know, it's still football. And then it's the Women's World Cup. And then occasionally you see coverage for the World Cup itself in the newspapers. I mean, you live in Wales. You know, you went to the games at Cardiff. You know, why is that? I mean, we get the whole thing about, you know, not being on free-to-air TV and all that. But still, you know, there should have been at least publicity.
Well, okay, right. That's a big question. You told me we would try to keep this to half an hour, so I'm going to try and keep this really brief. Okay. So there's a couple of points in there. One, all of the games for this World Cup are basically sold out. Yeah, there's a few seats that haven't been taken, but that's because they weren't part of a public sale because they went to corporate sponsors, right? And that's the way sponsorship works. And I'm sure it's frustrating for fans, but having worked for a tournament, what will happen is you'll sign a contract for somebody to sponsor it. So that's Nissan at the World Cup. And in that contract, they will be entitled to. Yeah, so that's, so the games are sold out. So from that point of view, mm-hmm. there's obviously interest in the tournament because the games are sold out, right? Sure. Secondly, right, the idea that cricket is difficult to watch in the UK, I think, is a bit of a misnomer. Sky Sports, which shows all of the cricket, is not an aspirational purchase. It's probably, to have the sports package is probably $30 a month,
mm-hmm.
$40 a month. That's on, you know, Sky, the basic, the minimum of a basic Sky package is in 11 of 27 million homes across the UK. Mm-hmm. So a third of the homes in the UK have Sky already. That's not including homes that have cable that then have Sky Sports. There's a lot of people that are able to watch sports. And I think what cricket perhaps needs to do in the UK is it needs to realize that it's not going to compete with football, and it's not going to get the numbers that a Football World Cup does on free-to-air TV, because the Football World Cup on free-to-air TV, that England game, comes on at 7 o'clock in the evening, yeah? Mm. And people can turn on their TV and they can watch it for an hour and a half and it's done. The Cricket World Cup starts at 10:30. And today's a Tuesday. Today's game started at 10:30 on a Tuesday morning and there was 28,000 people watching it. That's not a sport that's dying. That's not a sport that's in trouble. There's lots and lots to be happy about with cricket, and we could be doing better. But if you go along to any cricket club on a Friday night now, they're doing this All Stars program, which is completely funded by the money that Sky brings into the sport, that has at times hundreds of kids that are given a free bat and a free ball and a free bag and a free t-shirt, and they come along and have cricket coaching. If you were to come from India and expect to see the fever that you would have for a World Cup in India, in the UK, mm-hmm. that's just not going to happen. That's just not what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, one of the good barometers will be when I bump into people that know what I do for a living in my little village, and they'll ask me about the cricket. And that mm-hmm. happens quite a lot. The only other time I can remember that happening in the last year was when some Australians did some naughty things with a cricket ball. So, you know, I don't think it's as doom and gloom as it is. I think while you might, you know, if you go in a hotel room, you won't have Sky Sports on your TV in a hotel room because that's really expensive for them to do. But it'll probably be on the bar downstairs if you want to go and watch it. Sure. Right? So it's not like it's a completely inaccessible thing. And if you wanted to have Sky Sports, you could give up one takeaway a month and you could have Sky Sports.
Fair enough. Talking about the naughty Australians, you know, Virat Kohli during the match between India and Australia, you know, he was remonstrating to the Indian fans that were booing Steve Smith and told them that, indicated that they should be applauding him, which is a great player and he deserves to be applauded. Whereas Morgan, in the pre-match press conference, washed his hands off of it. I guess considering what Darren Lehman said in 2013 about Stuart Broad coming to Australia, so one might say, well, that's fair play. Where do you stand on it?
I don't think they did anything that wrong in the first place, and I think it's just pantomime nonsense. I don't think I've booed a cricketer in 30 years. Maybe 25. Yeah. Even in 2005 when people were booing, or 2009 when people were booing Ricky Ponting, I just thought it was a bit silly. But at the same time, you know, these are big boys that are paid millions of pounds a year. I'm sure they'll survive with being booed for a bit of nonsense. And the thing is as well, like I said, you know, it's not as if Australians, as you quite rightly pointed out, mate, it's not as if Australians can be on their high horse about this stuff, right? There was plenty of T-shirts.
Of course. I don't think Aussies are the ones, I don't think the Aussies would complain about it. But, no. You know, as a general...
I just think it's a bit fun. Like, you know, it's just one of the things I found more fascinating about it is that Warner isn't getting the boos when he walks out to bat with his partner, but Steve Smith is. So maybe it's because Warner was kind of seen as the pit bull and the pantomime villain, and Smith was the choir boy. And perhaps you're more shocked to see the choir boy involved in something naughty than you are the ragamuffin. And I think maybe that's a slightly more interesting thing. But by and large, as you know from having watched cricket in the UK, I've sat next to you watch cricket in the UK.
Of course.
There's a whole load of beard up men in their 40s that are frustrated with their life in general and are having a bit of what they think is a laugh by chanting nonsense and booing people. I think it's just a bit of a non-story, isn't it, really? From the start to finish, really, they aren't the first people to do ball tampering. And I'm sure the ridiculously inept way they did it probably shows that it was the first time they tried it. Otherwise, they'd have been gone before then as well, wouldn't they? It's just, you know... if people want to boo, they can boo. I wouldn't do it. I think it's a bit classless and crass, but I wouldn't criticize them overtly for it.
Fair enough. I have one last thing. You know, while England was chasing three early wickets, and then, you know, a couple more wickets. Well, Morgan goes off, and then Butler. Then Stokes has a really good partnership with Wokes. What were you thinking at the time when their partnership, you know, exceeded 50, and now, you know, Stark comes back into the attack? Obviously, people have already called it the ball of the tournament. Where do you stand on? So, your thoughts on the partnership and the delivery that Stark bowled?
And it's kind of a wider point about this England one-day team is that I've seen them win from ridiculous scenarios beforehand. Do you remember that game where they tied?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Chris Wilks scored 95 and tied, and Liam Plunkett tied it with a six.
Yeah,
against Sri Lanka, I think it was. Right. So I've seen them do ridiculous things. So what I find is I tweeted a GIF actually during the tournament of Al Pacino in Godfather Part 3. Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. That's kind of how I feel about this England team. Because even when Moeen hit that four, I went, could they? They couldn't. Could they? But yeah, I mean, because they bat so deep, and because the run rate was only, even at that stage, I think when...
It was seven.
That was just under sevens, wasn't it? You're thinking, yeah, they could do this. They could do this easy. You know, if Moeen actually came off, and then Chris Wokes is a proper batsman, you know, he's got 10 first-class hundreds.
Of course.
He averages 40 in first-class cricket. You know, they could still have done it. I think it was always pretty unlikely, right? Because the pressure would just start building and there'd be a few dot balls. What Australia have done brilliantly, and I kind of alluded to it earlier in this tournament, is they found a way to hide the fact their absence of a fifth bowler. The fact that they're getting 10 overs out of Maxwell and Stoinis is just unbelievable. And I think, again, to kind of go back to that West Indies game at Trent Bridge, I think there were still two or three overs left from that fifth bowler. And Brathwaite and Holder both go out attacking Stark when they needed 6.5, 7 and over.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where I think teams have been a bit silly, where they've kind of felt, you know, you could probably have Pat Cummins go for 55 runs off his 10 and Mitchell Stark go for 35 and still score 350 against the Australian team.
That is true. What did you think of the delivery, though? I mean, obviously,
that's amazing. I mean, Mitchell Stark's unreal. He's so good. And it's like another thing, you know, kind of the idea that old cricket's better than new cricket. We've got some amazing fast bowlers in this tournament, right?
Of course.
There's Lachie Ferguson, Mitchell Stark, Jofra Archer, Mark Wood. There's some people that are bowling rockets. And then combine that with, like, the, you know, probably my moment of the day was the catch that Maxwell took with Finch on the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those relay catches that would have blown my mind 5 years ago. And Maxwell did it just like, that's something I do every day, innit? I just take the ball, throw it back to my mate, and then just, you know, catch them when it should have gone for six. It was just so like, it's what we do now, right? I think cricket's really good now. Maybe it's my contrarian nature and the fact that cricket fans all want to say that everything was better when they were young and enthusiastic. But I genuinely think the sport's probably better now than it's ever been. One day cricket's probably as good now as it's ever been. Even this absolutely terrible tournament format hasn't ruined it for me, which says something.
All right, Peter, on that note, let you go. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You are very welcome. It's lovely to talk to you. It's been far too long.
Thank you all for listening. Log on to 81allout.com to subscribe to the podcast and all other podcast services, iTunes, etc. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
In the air, Srishant takes it! India wins!
He'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.